is our hope. As we've seen that as our theme as we study the book of 1 Peter, hope in a strange land. That happens when Jesus is the cornerstone of our life. And as we've been reading 1 Peter, now chapter 3, we're seeing how this is expressed in different ways, to be strange as a stranger, an exile in this world, that we live different, look different. We treat authority different. We treat government different. We're able to call out government because we belong to someone else. But yet, at the same time, we love authority because it reminds us of heaven and our cornerstone in Jesus. And we come to marriage and we do marriage different. And so we looked at that as we saw how husbands and wives are interacting with Christ as the cornerstone and how that plays out in our life. And so now we're coming to 1 Peter chapter 3, and we're going to verse 8 through 12, and it is a summary of this different lifestyle when Christ is the cornerstone, when we have hope, when this world is not our own, when we live by Christ alone. And so I want to share a couple of big ideas that come from this text that direct us in how we're to think. One of the things that have come to my mind is that we're going to look at living at home, the community of the church, and living in outside of home, the community outside of church, the world at large, and these two different perspectives. And as we look at this, one of the things I come to be reminded of is that we are more likely to get hurt at home than anywhere else. If you think about it, I had an employer who used to tell me, he said, "You better get out of bed. Don't you know more people die in bed than anywhere else?" And so that was his admonition, get out of bed, get to work, let's go. So it kind of plays in my mind every once in a while, but I think that it's not only true with the bed, it's generally at home. We get more people die home than anywhere else for several reasons. One, we're there more than other places, but second, we tend to be a little more careless at home. A week ago, I was pressure washing our house. Thought this was a good thing to do. I had a new pressure washer and I'm going to use it. Everything was successful up to this point. Time to go to the second floor. There's a couple ways you could do that. I choose the way where you're actually standing on the roof above the porch. I was about to say, hey, I had my daughter there to hand me the wand. I'm sure there's some technical term for that, the nozzle of the pressure washer. And, of course, I had chosen to do this in my flip-flops. And so it lasted maybe 10 seconds where my traction's gone and I'm sliding. And I always thought, at the moment, someone asked me, what do you think when you're going down the roof? One of the thoughts was, I always wondered what this was going to be like. And the other thought was, all right, how am I going to land? So I fortunately land in a bush, demolish the bush, demolish my flip-flop, which probably was a good thing. And fortunately, God preserved me with only just a couple of punctures from the bush. And it just kind of hit me, you know, just like that, you can go. And I have nothing really to say for it other than just the foolishness and carelessness of being at home and thinking, I've done this many times before, I'll be okay, because I was okay the last 15, 20 times, until you're not. Until you're not okay. And there's this sense of, I'm at home. What can go wrong? And we can be careless. And I think that can also happen in a church community where we can be at ease because we love the people there and they love us and we know them and we have a comfort level. And it, if we're not careful, can endanger the soul of us and the church. So consequently, I think Peter is going to say what he's about to say. And so let's see what he has to say. And 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8 through 12. I'm going to ask that we stand in honor of this being God's word. Finally, all of you have unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. Do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For to this you were called, that you may obtain a blessing. For whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. You may be seated. So homes can be dangerous. Communities of faith can be dangerous. Yet it's in this community of faith, as we read in 1 Peter, that they are enduring persecution. They are having attacks against them. And so in this time of binding together because they are being persecuted, you would think that this would be a great time of love, of security, of encouragement, of prayer, and it can be, but it also can be in times of stress as a society, where as the church, there can also be a biting with one another, a hurting of one another. And so as Peter is thinking about this, it's like, okay, this is what it means, according, beginning all the way in chapter 2, verse 11, when he talks about being sojourners and exiles, to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against the soul. And now he goes and talks about several passions that can wage war against the soul and how it can jeopardize and hurt the rebellious desire, a passion against authority and human institution. Verse 13 says, every human institution and to governors. But use your freedom not to cover up evil, but call it out. To not be those who are just cover things up. Verse 16, but live as servants of God, and yet honor everyone. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the emperor. And all these things that you hear said. And then as it goes in verse chapter 3, verse 1, likewise wives, and what it means for a wife to be with a man even when they are not right. When they act strange, as opposed to being obedient to God, they are contrary to God. And so in all these examples, whether it's government, wives, husbands, there is a sense of people are doing wrong. People are allowing injustice to happen. Oppression is happening. The boss is not treating the employee right. And there's this sense in all these passages of what do we do as a stranger in this world, to know that we belong as a citizen of heaven, that we are an exile here. How do we express that hope? That Christ is our hope. Marriage is not our hope. Husband, wife is not our hope. Our employee, our job is not our hope. Our government is not our hope. That we have a deeper, greater, more powerful cornerstone. To have Jesus as the cornerstone of our life, how does that flesh out? And let me just say, when the church is not to be your cornerstone, the church is not that. Jesus is the cornerstone. And if we get that confused, then the church ceases to be healthy. And so we have to flow with Christ being the cornerstone. And what makes us as a church is that we mutually all have Christ as the cornerstone, and it draws us to him and draws us to one another as a side effect. So finally, all of you, he's talking to the community of faith, to the church here. So let me just share this. As strangers and exiles, our hope is uniquely expressed by a community of humble love. By a community of humble love. He lists out five attitudes. Have unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love. Brotherly love is kind of the peak here. Tender heart or compassion is compared to sympathy, and a humble mind is compared to unity of mind. And so the way the grammatically the sentence works is that brotherly love is the peak, with this love being compared or modified by humility, unity, compassion, tenderness to one another. This is counterculture. Everyone wants to be a rebel. And what's so ironic about the American society is it applauds this individuality and being a rebel, but everyone yet looks the same as they rebel the same way. You remember when tattoos used to be rebellious? Now it's like, well, you're a rebel if you don't have a tattoo. Drinking used to be rebellious behavior and getting drunk. Someone has once said that if you want to be really counterculture, read the Bible, because no one's doing it. Read the Bible and take it serious. See how it shapes your life. And it shapes us down this road of Christ-likeness of Jesus, which looks like unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, tender heart, and a humble mind. So to have a community of humble love, to say that people put one another before their own needs, to say what matters to me is this unity of mind, that we work together, that though I don't get all my needs met, it's okay because I am serving with this community, putting the community before myself, and we will work together in Knightdale and Raleigh. One of the beautiful pictures of a society is of impact, of being salt and light, is to find a group of people who put one another before themselves. This past week, I went to the state convention, the Baptist, North Carolina Baptist Convention, something they do every year, and we, as messengers of our church, going there and just seeing the budget. And, you know, budget meetings is where it all comes out, isn't it? I mean, unity of mind, tenderness, sympathy sounds great, but it really comes true when we assign dollar amounts, right? And so we were looking at this budget. It's about, I think, $31 million for the state that we all, as Baptist churches, pitch in some resources and monies toward this. And it does disaster relief, church plants, various other things throughout our state, the Baptist Children's Home, a lot of different things. And so there was starting to be a rift that was developing where people wanted to send more money to the National Southern Baptist Convention than to keep what we had set aside. And so this rift was developing, and this is about 2,000 or 3,000 people and Robert Rules of Order. Really challenging. And so rumors were starting to fly around that someone's going to make amendment, and we're going to try to change this. And there's nothing like having a discussion among 1,000 people or a couple thousand people in this. One man came up representing a ministry of the state convention, and he said, "I would like to make an amendment. We had set aside $45,000 from our budget to go to this North Carolina Baptist Foundation, which is a kind of a trust. This is what was set aside for our budget to have. We would like to forego that. We would make an amendment that $45,000 get cut from our budget and let it go to the national group." And the reason he said is because it means more to have unity in our group than whether we get $45,000 in our ministry. At that moment, every heart that was kind of rising up against this, against the budget, automatically was won over by humility and a willingness to lay down their own desires. I was proud at that moment to say, this is part of who we are. To say that as a church, this is the type of attitude, the humility of mind, to be able to share that we want unity in our body. That matters more than whether or not some ministry gets prominence or a person gets prominence. To say that this matters more, what we are as a church. And then it's marked by sympathy, affected by like feelings. This is how our Savior was. He sympathizes with our weakness. And so we're to enter into what other people are feeling, to rejoice with those who rejoice, learn how to weep with those who weep, to allow the suffering of others to touch our emotions. So when we enter into a church, It is to put yourself in a vulnerable spot. I remember when we had, when we moved from two girls to a third boy and then a fourth boy, you know, I just kind of played the odds. Man, having two kids, we're much more likely to endure a car accident, a tragedy. And the third one, then the fourth one, I was like, oh, we're doomed. You know, something bad's going to happen. Because the family increases, the probability increases. I can't think that I'm going to get out of this life just scot-free of any kind of danger. It's going to happen. And so as we look at this and we embrace into a church family, there's a willingness to say, we're not going to get through this without tragedy. Whether it's me, it's going to be someone I love. The more people I love, the more people I'm bringing into my family, the more people that I am willing to suffer with, to weep with, to cry with. Living isn't found in the absence of bad things. Your heart is broadened. The grace of God, the Spirit of God broadens out the reach of your heart as you get into a church body. And so there's the sympathy with one another to be affected by the feelings of others. And then it says brotherly love. That we are to be as a family, right? Brotherly. It is to say that a church is a family. That's one of the sayings you're going to hear from us in the next little while, is that the church is the family and the family is to be a church. A small church. And so it's not like, it is. There is a sense of belonging to one another. And then as the church grows, and as we reach people, impact people, what impacts them is not my preaching. What impacts them is not the music or the facilities. What is going to impact people is a willingness to be embraced by a community. And a community that is willing to bring them in and say, I want you to be part of our family. Because listen, they can listen, they can find good preaching and good music and good facilities anywhere. But to find a community of faith, a people where they belong, a people that brings others in. This is part of the brotherly love, to say you are a family. And then to be kind or tender-hearted, compassionate, very similar to sympathetic, to know that, that there's this, again, this emotional element. There's some, I was able to share with a young lady that's been visiting our church, and she was just crying, and she's like, I'm so embarrassed. I don't want to be crying. I don't want to be viewed as weak. My statement was, if you can't be seen crying at church, and I'm not sure where you can cry at. But we have this persona of like, we can't be weak. We can't show our frailty. Listen, a church is where frailty is shown and loved and forgiven. But we kind of treat church like it's some social club, like some clique in high school. It's not that. It is a willingness to be saying, this is who I am, and I'm crying. And you can find someone to cry with at a church. Can we be that place? To be humble in spirit. Jesus was described himself as humble in heart. This was not the way of what most people would do in the Roman society. And really, honestly, it's not the way that we work in our corporate life, in our community life. We like to say, well, how many people are employees at your business? And the question really is, how many people do you get to do your will? How many people are at your beck and call to get your will be done? A church is how many people you serve. How many people you willingly put your resources on the table to help others that come into our place. And this doesn't just look like a budget. It looks like Sunday you come here and you find out someone has needs. You've never met them before. You go and say, hey, what can really help you? How can we come alongside of you and put you in a place where your family is stable, where we can love you and you can be on your way to loving someone else. It's to have that opportunity. This past week, one of the things, the reasons we're showing and talking about the mission trips this past summer, heard Lynch trip today, we'll hear again next week, heard about the trip to Puerto Rico, is first Sunday of December, we want to have our Lottie Moon In Gathering, which is a gift we give to support missionaries all over the world. But on that same Sunday, we want to be sharing with you trips that we will be taking together, Lord willing, for 2019. So we want you to hear what has been done with the thought the first Sunday of December, here's what we hope to do. Here are some trips that we plan, we'd love for you to be a part of. I would like to share that at the end of this month, I believe the last Thursday and Friday, we have a group of men that are looking at going to Davis Church, which is way east, near Harkers Island, a church there that has been impacted by the hurricane. If you are interested in going, Emery York, raise your hand. He's all the way in the very back. Raise it high, Emery. Don't be ashamed. There's Emery. Talk to him if you're interested in doing that the last Thursday and Friday of this month, as well as other trips that we hope to have. This idea of putting the needs of someone else above our own. Lowliness of mind. These are attitudes. Attitudes can communicate more than even our words do. So we can say nice things, but if our attitude is not there, then the Nightdale, Raleigh, this society can't see that there's a people that have a heavenly citizenship. It's reflected in our attitude. It's been said in some communication books that words alone account for only 7% of the communication process. The words alone are only 7%. Tone of voice, inflection, account for 38%. The remaining 55% is found in facial expressions, posture, and gestures. It's amazing how much we'll do by email and texting. But we know when it comes to face-to-face, it's the nonverbals that communicate immensely more. And so we're not going to study how to do good nonverbals. We're just going to try to have a good heart that follows after Jesus Christ. And let our heart be set by Christ, the cornerstone. Let it portray out in our attitude. Then we go to verse 9. And he doesn't really say that this is just outside the church. This could also be within the church, which is interesting, isn't it? Do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling. But on the contrary, blessed, for to this you were called, that you may obtain a blessing. So let me just share this. As strangers and exiles, our hope is uniquely expressed by a community that purposes to be a blessing to everyone. That as a church, one of our purposes is to be a blessing to everyone. This is to say that we're going to love our neighbor, near and far. We're going to find ways to be a blessing to the people that come and cross our paths as we live through this town, as we work through the preschool, through our own personal lives. But then we're going to be able to work together to figure out how to be a blessing to people in the Arabian Peninsula through our members that are there, through East Asia, through our members that go there, through East India, through some contacts that we have that have gone there to find ways that we can be a blessing to them as well. But we can't just shine the light over there if we're not shining the light right here in Nightdale and Raleigh. To say that we are to be a blessing, and it starts as we look at this as folks who are not really nice to us. Do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling. On the contrary, bless, for to this you're called, that you may obtain a blessing. And then he quotes Psalm 34. Whoever desires to love life and see good days. You want a good life. It's interesting, I looked at that phrase, good life. I think we've had about three songs in the last 3 years that had that title, good life. Most every single one of them involves some reference of flying in a jet, your own jet, drinking your own champagne. And that was personified. You want the good life? It looks like this. All three songs had some reference to that. I think about that as I watched a documentary about Elvis Presley, the searcher who had his jet, who had all these things, and he struggled and did not really describe that as being the good life. Here the Word of God is saying, here's the good life. It is to say that we're going to keep our tongue from evil, keep our lips from speaking deceit, turn away from evil, do good, seek peace, and pursue it. In other words, to be under the authority of God. Even when people are lashing out against us, that especially when the lies are being told, when the stories are shared, when we're painted as a negative light, as mean, as evil, as wrong, or as not good for society, when these things are being said, we don't repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, because we know that we are still under the authority of God no matter what's being said. And we want to honor that. A few years ago, I remember being struck by a line, by a song by U2. It was a concert in 2005 from Milan, and it was Miss Sarajevo. And in the introduction to it, he had this statement. He said, this song is dedicated to those who were recently bombed in London in that time period, but it's done with a prayer that we would not become the monster in order that we would defeat the monster. I thought about that phrase, that our society is trying hard to say, how can we be a loving society? How can we be a tolerant society? But they don't have the income to make it happen. They don't have the heart capital to make it happen. All they can say is, well, let's just be tolerant. Let's be kind. Let's be loving, unless we find people that we would define as unkind, intolerant, and unloving. And in those cases, we will lash out with no tolerance whatsoever. And they become the very monster that they were seeing as the problem. In this age of polarization and politically, that we all act the same, it's just the labels are different. Christians are to be a little different than that. I'm reminded of 2015, the church in Charleston, South Carolina, the Emmanuel Church, one of the oldest African-American churches in Charleston. Dylan Roof comes in with the design of starting a race war that was already well on its way, and comes into a Bible study on a Wednesday night and just shoots away. Dylan Roof escapes, only to be arrested in Shelby, North Carolina, on Dixon Boulevard. Somewhat ironic, in that Dixon Boulevard was named after one of the beginners of the KKK in North Carolina. There, Dylan Roof was arrested on Dixon Boulevard. But in all that had happened up to this point, the riots and things, momentum really started to shift when at the bond hearing, these believers start making these statements to Dylan Roof, to his face. DePayne Middleton, doctor, 49-year-old, said, For me, I am a work in progress. I am very angry. But we are the family that love built. We have no room for hate, so I have to forgive. One after another, statements of forgiveness from believers passed on to Dylan Roof. It was within days that it was decided maybe the Confederate flag is not a good thing to have at the state capital of South Carolina. It's amazing the movement and shifting that happened, not because people try to hang on to their traditions, not because someone declared, let's be tolerant, let's be kind, let's not shoot people, momentum and things started to change because believers said, that was wrong. But it's not so wrong that it can't be forgiven. We will stand there and we will absorb the price of forgiveness because Christ has absorbed the price of forgiveness in our life. When humility and grace comes out, that is when you see, as you look in the history of America, what has been the Christian influence. It's not necessarily all of the framers, but it's the people in the trenches who said, grace is better. Forgiveness is what's called for here. Let me show that love and let it come at a price to me. When you revile, when you say evil, let me be the one that says, I will give good words in return. I will give a blessing. Do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, because we live on a basis where we don't belong here. We belong to a citizenship in heaven. God has called us out with it from darkness into his marvelous light. It's happened by God's grace, and it impacts us. It changes how we think. And so we don't just operate, say, well, be kind, be good. It's kind of like we say that to our kids every once in a while when they start snapping at one another. So, be kind. Stop it. Be kind. Because the word kindness is so far removed from that context. But it's a fool to think that just because I say that they will, right? It takes a movement of the heart. It takes the gospel of Jesus Christ, that Jesus Christ died on the cross, that he was kind and good to us when we have been treasonous and selfish against him. But on the contrary, bless, for to this you were called. Get that. What were you called to do? As a believer in Jesus Christ, I am called to bless the people around me. And so the question that we have to ask, and I remember asking this about 10 years ago in our church body, and asking, if our church disappeared, would anyone miss us in the community? And it's been amazing to see as God's been working in different ways in our community along the way. But to say, how are we a blessing to Knightdale? How are we a blessing to the Arabia and to Asia? But certainly, how are we a blessing right here? And it's done as we work together as a church, but it's also done as we live our life personally, one by one. So the question must come to you individually, directly. You were called to be a blessing. How is that going? Are you a blessing to the people around you? And it's been said that you're either a giver or a taker. Because of what God is doing in our life, we can be givers. We can be a blessing to the others. So whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Even when no one can hold you accountable. It happened to me this past week. Someone came up and talked to me. Hadn't been to our church in maybe, I don't know, visited our church 2 or 3 years. Knew certain folks in our church and was asking about it. And I thought, I've got a choice here. They may never know, but God knows. And it means more to be living under the authority of God than whether you're making some good impression on someone. Be under his authority. That means that I am not going to bring my tongue to evil. I'm not going to speak deceit to make myself look better than I am and make someone else look worse. But instead, turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. Two boys were arguing about a chocolate because one boy stole the chocolate from the other one and was just fighting about it. And the mother was getting fed up with it and said, son, forgive him. And he responded, but he's not even listening to me. He doesn't want to be forgiven. She said, I don't care. Make him listen. Not realizing what that would carry out. So the one boy pursued, literally, chased down his brother, sat on him, and yelled at him, "I forgive you, but it would be easier if you wiped the chocolate off your mouth for me to forget." Kind of sometimes how it is, isn't it? Where it sure would be easier to forgive if they would wipe it off. But yet the Bible says pursue peace, seek peace. Maybe not that aggressively. But there's this tendency where we say, well, time will do its magic. I've seen time not soften things, but time can make things hard and bitter. The same sun that can melt the wax can harden the clay. The difference is, what is the heart made of? If it's made of grace and experiencing forgiveness, it can, even when the sun is on it, as time goes on, to say, let me be graceful, let me be forgiving, let me not hold this against them anymore. Let me see Jesus when I see that sin, when I see that offense, let me see Christ. Let it soften your heart that you can pursue peace. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to the prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Church, citizens of heaven, exiles in this land, we are a people who want to be under the authority of Jesus at every single time. No matter what's being said, no matter how society treats us collectively or individually, we are going to be the ones who put out the blessings of God continually. Because it is Jesus Christ who is nourishing our heart with his blessings. And when Jesus is our cornerstone, not our pride, not our reputation, not even on this world's justice, when Christ is our cornerstone, it will nourish us of that. But if it's one of these other things, our pride, our reputation, this world's justice, we will find ourselves bankrupt in giving grace out to others. It cannot satisfy. But to be really counterculture, really counterculture, it's not whether or not you eat something or drink something or how you're dressed. Real counterculture looks like grace and forgiveness and blessings when those revile you. Are you ready to rebel against this world? Christ is leading the way. Let's pray.